Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
It's 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall, where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
Do you buy Tom Ricketts saying the Cubs weren't active in free agency because they're out of money? Are the Cubs being smart or missing out on a shot at another World Series?
Well, I think that that's a polite way of saying it for Tom. But I think that the fact of the matter is they're not going to pay for any more busts. You know, they paid a lot of big money without any kind of bang for that dollar a year ago. And I did think when they signed Yu Darvish as late as they did, that they were dipping into kind of this year's free agent pool. And I think that, you know, we don't want to talk about it because salary cap stuff and all that. Before there was a salary cap, there was a thing that was called a team's bottom line, right? They don't want to spend a ton of money for their bottom line. And I don't think that was part of the plan. And so now it turns out that the price of paying poker might have been cheaper than you imagined. But Tom went on a little bit about how much these guys cost you moving forward. I think the joker in the pack here is that apparently all these free agents are starting, these potential future free agents are starting to negotiate with their own teams, and teams are starting to get smart about trying to get their guys under contract before they hit free agency. And that usually, when you're paying a guy early, that usually gives you a little bit of a benefit in terms of a hometown discount for a long-term contract, and I think we're going to see more of that happening based on what we've seen in the market this year. So it doesn't surprise me that they didn't want to go for Bryce Harper. I think that they're going to have to pay a lot of their own free agents. And it really, I don't think Tom said anything that we weren't expecting to hear. And when you start talking about we don't have the money, he probably means the cash in hand. They have a lot of investments going on. They're pouring a lot of money into the neighborhood. I understand the baseball budget is different than the other budget, but they're a top five payroll, as he said, since they started competing, and they don't want to sink their teeth into free agency. I don't think it costs them a shot at the World Series. Unlike Pecota, I believe that they're going to win the division. I think they're going to be a pretty good baseball team, and would one move put him over the top? They thought it would last year with Yu Darvish.
I'll start with the second part. I want to stay consistent, and I don't believe that they're missing out on a World Series window by not pursuing either guy, because I think that they're looking ahead, as he alluded to, in the future contracts of guys like Baez and Bryant and some other core guys that they're going to have to pay at some point. So I understand that, and I don't look at this as missing out on a World Series opportunity. That said, it wasn't so much what he said, it was how he said it, that we're out of money. And it sort of was in a way that it felt like he blurted it out. And I don't think that any layman who walks through Wrigleyville and sees the development there and Hotel Zachary and Gallagher Way and everything that is just looks great and different and rich, that they're going to buy the idea that the Ricketts are out of money. And I think that's the problem, is that it's hard to relate to that, because you've got Forbes who reporting $457 million in revenue for the Cubs in their last reports.
And that's where it's all being spent.
And it's being spent. And you wonder, in this offseason, a month ago, we kind of glossed over a story where, you know, the Cubs or they bought back 5% of the remaining ownership stake from Tribune Media.
Right.
That wasn't cheap. So, and you wonder, with all this construction and all this development, is it over budget? And then the money that they had to invest in the buying back the Tribune Media stock. And then, as you pointed out, these free agent misses aren't cheap. Darvish was $126 million. Chatwood was $38 million. Their failure cost you $20 more million in Cole Hamels. So that's one big
That's another big expenditure. Another $20 million on him.
It's a big expenditure. So I get what he was saying, and it's all very, you know, defensible if you get out the line item and you start going through the accounting of it. But I think that when you hear the chairman say that we're out of money, the way that he said it, it's hard for the average fan to say, okay, I get that, because the numbers you look at and it's just walking by, it's harder to accept. But so, yeah, I do buy it, but I think it's not easy to it's not easy to hear.
Gordon was trying to convince them that they need to spend some money, but it wasn't working. Yeah, Ricketts gave the money quote about the money that we've been waiting on. But Theo's been saying it. Jed's been saying it. They've all been telling us they're not spending big money on a free agent. They've been saying it again and again, but we just don't want to believe them because they surprised us in the past. We weren't expecting the Darvish signing a year ago. The projected payroll is at $212 million. And if you slide that into 2018, that would have been the second highest in all of baseball, only behind the Boston Red Sox. The part that bothers people is saying we don't have any money.
That's it.
They don't have enough money to get the big ticket free agent. That's what they're saying. The first level of the luxury tax is $206 million. I mentioned they're projected to be over that. So you start adding $20, $30 million onto that this season. No, they're not doing that. We all know that it's a soft cap, but is it really? These teams are refusing to get up to that level. And I understand. I think they're being smart about it. Harper, he doesn't put them over the top. Great addition. Make them better. Far and away the favorites in the Central Division, but it doesn't guarantee them anything.
He's a massive expenditure to make up for a massive expenditure.
Well, that's the thing. And the Cole Hamels, the $20 million option, when he arrived, it was joked about. There's no way they're going to pick up that option. They'll just buy him out and he'll be gone. He pitched so great, and you didn't have Darvish available, and Chatwood was so bad, and at times Quintana was struggling a lot. He isn't as good as you expected him to be. They were forced to pick up that $20 million option. So I think they're still good enough to win a World Series, but they're being smart about it.
I don't know if they're good enough as constructed now to win a World Series. I think they've got a shot. They certainly have enough talent up and down the 25-man, whatever the opening day roster is going to be in the hunt. I don't anticipate them being in last place like Pecota does, but you know, I don't expect them to win 90 games either. If you, and not even just Bryce Harper, because of course he's the guy that's going to cost you the most amount of money, but there's no reason that they shouldn't have been more active in pursuing relievers. I think, I mean, they have the money to sign Craig Kimbrell if they want him and to have a shutdown closer at the end of games. I think that would make them a much bigger favorite in the National League Central. To hear a guy who's a literal billionaire say that we don't have any money is the most out of touch, obscene thing that I've heard in at least a week or so since the last obscene, out of touch thing that came out of the Cubs camp. So, I mean, there was literal laughter in the room when he said we don't have any money. So I don't know if it was supposed to be tongue in cheek or what.
I think he's talking about baseball budget. I don't think he's talking about his pocket.
It's ridiculous, though. The Cubs and any other organization in baseball, I don't want to make it seem like I'm just harping on the Cubs here. Every organization in baseball, from Tampa Bay to the Yankees, can afford to sign anybody they want. They all have all of this money. And to say that you don't is disingenuous.
It's a for-profit organization. It's not. You're not volunteering your money. You understand?
But he's right about the optics. That's what it,
I'm not
the
arguing. But
are
do people not understand
sketchy.
The bottom line on a business?
We have a hotel or an ice rink.
We have a texter saying, "I don't have $10 for a Goose Island." You know, then don't spend it.
Well, they also just got burned twice on two monster contracts.
Well, three if you count Chetty. It's a lot of money.
Right. Theo's league.
It's Tyler Chatwalk. Okay, let's all get on board. Let's get it right. Tyler Chatwalk. No Chatty. Especially you, Mully. I mean, you're the last one. You hate these.
That is
nicknames.
A mock. Chatty. That is a mock Chatty, friend.
Chatwalk. Chatwalk. Listen, and Mully's right.
Chatty.
Unfortunately, this is a business at the end of the day. And I talked about this with David. You know, I almost felt like Tom was like fed up. It was not the Tom Ricketts that I, as a Cub fan, have really grown a lot of admiration for. He just seemed almost uninterested yesterday. Like, ugh, I've got to do this again. And I get it. We're going to get into this in the next question. The tone of the questioning, the theme of the press conference was not an enjoyable theme for anybody to have to do. But the idea that they're out of money, and Mully, you were right about the Yu Darvish money was this year's money. And I think that they thought, and listen, we all thought, we all know the Cubs' Achilles heel was starting pitching. They needed to buy it because they can't seem to pick it in development in the minor leagues. They just bought the wrong guy. So if anything, I think Crane Kenny and Tom Ricketts took away the never-ending black American Express card away from Theo and the boys and said, you know, guys, we're going to tighten it up a little bit here. Okay, we've been in the top five in payroll. And so they've kind of taken the checkbook away. So I don't think that they're out of money per se. But, you know, there was also a spot there for a follow-up. And I know the media has been getting beat up a little bit, the assembled media out in Arizona for what happened on Friday with Addison Russell. And maybe they went a little over the top with Tom yesterday. Okay, Tom, with all due respect, you've done a great job over the last decade with the Cubs. Explain what you mean by that. Can you dumb it down a little bit for us? Like, define out of money. That's a simple follow-up, right? Couldn't we have used that right now so that we're not laughing at it and Kevin's not going all nuclear on Tom Ricketts this morning?
Not going nuclear at all. I'm just saying it's whatever.
The most asinine thing I've heard in 5 days.
Well, I've been gone for a few days.
Nobody noticed.
I don't quite get the question.
What did you think of the way Tom Ricketts explained the racist emails of his daddy Joe?
Well, I think it fell a little flat. I think that it was a little disappointing for a lot of people that wanted to hear a little more outrage. Look, it's a difficult situation. It was uncomfortable to watch, and certainly I think that maybe dictated the tone of everything else that Tom Ricketts said. He did not want to be there, and I don't blame him because nobody wants to talk about the sins of their father. I don't think they want to be held responsible for them either. That said, I think you can love somebody and be disappointed in them. And I didn't sense that he said he was disappointed. He said he was surprised. And he said that it was unfortunate the emails got out. And it was unfortunate they were there for everyone to digest. And they were even stolen. And I think that when you hear some of the language that he used, it, you wanted to hear the same sort of, you know, I think he needed to say, he needed to denounce them in a way that he just didn't. I think he's, you know, Tom Ricketts comes across most every other time as a man of the people, as a guy that is, you know, prides himself in going around the park and being among the fans and being one of them. Well, I think he seems a little detached yesterday, and I think that was part of it because it was awkward and it was difficult to discuss some of these things publicly. But I think that you can't ignore the fact that you wanted to hear more. You wanted to hear maybe him be more critical about things that were just vile email and language that he didn't hear growing up. He didn't hear, you know, when he discusses things with his father, but they're out there for everyone to digest and to see, and you just can't ignore them. And I think that he tried to maybe gloss over them and ignore them as much as he possibly could.
You know, I really felt bad for Tom yesterday. That's got to be an impossible job to do because it's exactly what you're saying, David. That's what everybody wants to hear. But the fact is that he loves his father. The fact is that he believes his father is a great man. The fact is that it's got to be super difficult to sort of go after your father. And, you know, his father ought to be the guy that faces the music on this, not Tom. It's unfair to have the son up there trying to defend the sins of the father. I understand why. He's in charge of the organization, and it was his father's money that purchased the team. I get it. But I just think that as the son, it's an untenable position to be put in. I don't know, you know, I don't know that he feels, I don't know that he wants to go up there and badmouth his dad. And I think that when, you know, whoever said that he seemed out of sorts, I'm sure that's why. I'm sure that's a very difficult thing to have to do. It doesn't mean.
Didn't you have the feeling that dictated everything else that he said?
I totally agree.
Because there was no comfort level achieved because that's the way it started. And he knew why he was there.
And I think everyone knew it. And yeah. I think it was really a difficult thing. And that's what I say. I feel compassion toward Tom. I think that's a really difficult thing to do. And I think that it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the old man was out of line and that was wrong and that. And all of the obvious things about it. And, you know, to have to address it again and to have to go talk to the team about it. You know, it's just a very difficult situation. And I wish that the father had been the one that had to face those questions. And we saw how he reacted to it.
Shouldn't he still?
I don't know. I don't know. You know, I don't know
I don't think they will. I don't think we'll ever see that because I think they want to keep that line very separate between him and the team.
Right.
So you're
a result, that led Tom in front of a crowd of people that were going after him with questions about his father and picking apart, you know, why didn't he say he was sorry? Didn't they say they were sorry already? Isn't he trying to make amends? Aren't they doing different things and trying to get programs in? I'm just saying, I think that's a really difficult thing if you are the son of a powerful man and somebody that, you know, kind of dominated your life. They have like a very strong family unit. It's not just business and money. They have like a lot of, you know, they're... Father is involved in their lives. He's a grandfather. Their mother is around. You know, it's not. I mean, we try to take them out of context. We try to kind of. I just think it was a really rough day for Tom.
It was. It's easy for everyone on the outside to say you just do this. You can't defend your father in any way. But we don't know the ramifications behind the scenes, and it could lead to family fights for years and years, public embarrassment, all that kind of stuff. But with all of that said, just looking at Tom's performance yesterday, it was a major failing grade for me. It was so bad that Ricketts becomes the story today in all of his comments, including what's going on with the team, instead of the news dump that we had on Friday with Addison Russell. I mean, just stayed consistent, no direct role, family values. I do wish that Joe Ricketts was out there, but you can't have him anywhere near a Cubs logo in front of photographs that would be out there.
That'd be terrible
video.
Imaging.
Yeah, yeah. You can't do it. So I understand why this was their plan. Something that really put me off was when Tom started patting himself on the back, just saying how we set out for all these goals, and look at all these games that
we crushed it, Joe.
Oh, we're a great neighbor. Again, the wins, the wins, the wins. Coming off Addison Russell a few days ago.
We crushed it.
Yeah, so we know the focus that is going on. And yeah, there are a few different times. It just felt like Ricketts was treating fans and everybody watching and listening like they're the morons here.
I do agree that it was a rough spot for Tom to be in, but I don't think he handled a lot of it as best as he could have. I do think I kind of got a sense, Joe, as well, that he was sort of talking down to not only fans but media members and people that took issue with these emails, and the fact that we're still talking about this so many weeks later is really unfortunate for the Cubs, but it did happen. The emails were published, and people can go on and on about, you know, how they got out and this, that, and the third. Well, I mean, if you rob a bank and you get away with it, you still robbed the bank. And if you get caught somewhere down the line, there should be repercussions for that. So, you know, I don't know what he meant by the emails were based on the news of the day or anything like that. There were a lot of weird quotes that I didn't really quite get.
Should I explain it to you? I mean, come on.
What? Yeah, can you? Go ahead.
I mean, it was around 9/11. Did you look at the datelines?
Yeah,
I mean,
they're not that old at all.
Okay,
I mean, and if it could be September 12th, then it wouldn't excuse anything that came out.
Nobody said it was an excuse. I'm talking about why
you butted in and you're trying to carry water for Tom Ricketts right now, and his email.
I will.
And Joe Ricketts, the financier. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Who out there wants to have to go up in front of anybody and defend something bad that their parents did, right? No, nobody wants to have to go do that. And maybe that's the price of poker for $400 million to go ahead and be able to buy the Cubs. Maybe that's the burden, right? And you're right, Joe Ricketts should probably have to face the music. But you know what? I don't think we're ever going to hear publicly from Joe Ricketts ever again. I don't think you'll ever see Joe Ricketts at Wrigley Field. I don't think we'll hear from him as far as anything to do with the Cubs ever again. I don't see that at all. I do think it was a hard day for him. What other way could he have handled it? I mean, if you have a problem with it, then I think you need to text us or you need to call us, because I thought he did, from that part of it, I thought he did well. There were other things in the press conference I had issues with, but I thought he did the best he could. That is a burden that nobody wants to have to go through.
That is an unbelievably great question.
Rick Renteria says, Yoan Moncada could open the season at third base. What does that indicate, if anything? And is that positive or negative news?
I guess it indicates that they believe that they've got a guy on the come at second base. And it'll be very interesting to follow Nick Madrigal in the minors this year and see if they try to play him at all at shortstop, if they try to play him maybe at center field, to try to move him around and see if there's a position where he might be more valuable to the team than second base. Here's why I don't like this, and here's why this kind of bothers me. I think Yoan Moncada has a ton on his plate. Number one, he's trying to prove that he's not a bust, and that's a huge number one. Number two, he's got to figure out how to stop striking out. And until he gets that sorted out, I would prefer to not have him learning a new position. And I know he's played it before in the minor leagues, but I think the guy sees himself as a second baseman, and moving him to third might be the best thing for the organization, and maybe it'll work out. But it just seems to me that he's on the we don't think about him as this top prospect, that, you know, number one prospect in baseball. We think, like, boy, did they follow up with that Chris Sale trade. And he needs to change that thinking. And moving him from one position to another before you resolve what his major issue is in terms of how he's hitting in the major leagues, that just seems crazy to me.
See, I look at it the opposite way, in terms of giving him too much to think about. I think this probably gives him less to worry about, because at second base, as a rookie last year, in his first full season, I think he led the majors in errors among second basemen. And I think that when you look at him trying to maybe, you know, get better at that part of the job, and that, you know, defensively, maybe he took that to the plate too often. Maybe he's more natural here. It's certainly somewhere he played in winter ball, and maybe this is a move along those lines. It's certainly, I don't think it is a message to, you know, Manny Machado that, hey, shortstop's there for you. We're starting to move now, and Tim Anderson's going to end up at second base, and hey, shortstop is yours, Manny. I don't know that that would be the message here. Madrigal is a guy to watch when you look at what he's done already in terms of opening some eyes at spring training with his bat control and his eye for, you know, the plate and everything else that comes with being one of those kind of just natural hitters. That's kind of exciting if you're a Sox fan. I think probably Yolmer Sanchez is a guy that looks like he could open the season at second base if Moncada is indeed your opening day third baseman. So I think it's more of a positive thing, because this is a move that if Moncada can just focus on not worry about having to be the best second baseman every day and leading the majors again at a position that maybe he didn't naturally grasp, then maybe he comes of age at the plate as well.
Roster flexibility. I think it's more than just Nick Madrigal. When you're trying to work your way through a season, things pop up that you don't expect. There are injuries, there are doubleheaders, and sometimes 20 straight days or even longer, like the Cubs dealt with last season.
Oh, I never heard anything about that.
where you end up playing games. So you need roster flexibility. And when the Cubs have dealt with injuries, something we didn't really talk about because it wasn't an issue, because they have so many guys that can play so many different positions. And down the road, they think they're setting up to have a really deep roster. And you want as few guys as possible that are locked in to one position, like Abreu. You don't want many of those. So if Moncada can play a few different positions, like I think they're going to do with Tim Anderson this season, or continue to do that with him, the better.
Yeah, I agree with you, Joe. Roster flexibility, I think more than ever now, is much more important. And to credit Joe Maddon, which is something I don't do a ton, he was kind of one of the first guys to bring this in when he was with Tampa Bay. And he would move guys around, and not just in the lineup, but, you know, play them at different positions more often than not. And I think that's a good thing because of all the reasons you just listed, whether it is injuries or fatigue or the grind of the season. You know, Yoan Moncada is a great athlete. He played shortstop coming up, so it's not like he's always been a second baseman. I think he can play third. Yolmer is a versatile guy. They've got guys in the outfield that can play all three positions out there. And I think Anderson, like you said as well, Joe, might be moved around a bit as well. So I don't have any problem with this. I don't know if this, you know, predicts anything that's going to happen in terms of free agent signings. But I think a guy learning to play another position can only be a good thing.
Yeah, Molly, I think, you know, you went off in a direction on that. I agree with you, but the flip side of it could be if you really refocus him on third base. Like, he needs to you know, the ball's coming at him from a different direction. I know he's a trained shortstop, right? But this year, now it's coming at him that way. He's got to get his footwork down. Now he's got to, you know, step on third, throw to second, and all these types of, maybe that could refocus him and re-energize him, perhaps. You know, the bigger news would have been if all of a sudden Tim Anderson was taking balls out in center field or at second base, right? That would have been like, wah, 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 like, put off the sirens and everything else. So this could go one way or the other, right? I think it could go very, very well for him, or in your explanation, it could go really, really bad for him. It could be one too many things on this young guy's plate to go along with the fact that he failed at second base, kind of failed at the plate. I mean, listen, strikeouts are not good. And Sir Bernstein come up with some metric to tell me that they are a good thing, better than RBIs or batting average or something.
Better than hitting to a double play.
Okay, that's true. I will agree with that. Yes, striking out is better than hitting into a double play. See, we agreed on something.
Glad to see you again.
Dustin, great question.
The Blackhawks just 1 point out of the playoffs. How should they move forward with Corey Crawford and others?
Corey Crawford says he's ready. Corey Crawford participated in the morning skate yesterday after being out sick on Saturday. He may or may not make the trip to Detroit, may or may not be activated from injured reserve. But if he's ready, you're ready to play him. I think sooner the better. If he has crossed the hurdle mentally, that he can be back on the ice, and certainly the concussion history is well documented, but that's something that is up to him, the Blackhawks, and the doctors. And if they're willing to put him out there, then he needs to play. This is a team that is 1 point out of the final playoff spot in the Western Conference. There are 22 games left. This is an opportunity that is there for the taking. To be able to seize it, though, you need Corey Crawford in net. With him in net, you are a different team. You have different expectations. You have different opportunities. Because if you go into the playoffs as the hot team that sneaks in there as the eighth seed or the seventh seed or whatever it may be, and you have Corey Crawford, who is fresh and who is playing at a high level, then all of a sudden this season becomes even more fun than it has been the last month to watch. And that's the thing that the Hawks are doing. They're having fun. Dylan Strome said after the game, hockey's fun. Well, it's fun when you score 8 goals and win. And not so much if you give up 7 and lose. They scored 8 and they won. What they need now is to tighten things up. That will help if Corey Crawford's your goalie.
Yeah, I would try to trade him if you could. I'd try to get him back and then try to get him off the books, you know. Not to make it sound too, I don't know, I don't want to be cruel about it or anything else, but he's been hurt, and he's been hurt for a while, and he did win cups, but he did so with, like, world-class defenders in front of him. And his contract is for $5 million next year. If you could get out from under that money, $6 million, is it? If you could get out from under that money, you could probably do something that would really help your team in the right now and maybe moving forward. So I think Corey is an older player. He is 33 now, right? Heading to 34. And if you could get that contract off the books, if there's a team out there that really needed a goalkeeper, at first I was thinking Cam Ward might be the best idea, but maybe moving forward, you have a young guy and then you try to get, you know, a kind of rent a player veteran guy for year after year. But I don't see Corey Crawford as the answer.
It's a team, maybe it's a different team, but they're the same team to piggyback off Mully that has had discussions about Keith and Seabrook and guys that for a long time have been part of this core. I mean, yeah, maybe they squeeze in. They're still not even a 500 club at this point. But as far as Crawford goes, he's saying he's healthy and ready. I assume that he is healthy and ready because he better not be practicing if he isn't healthy 100%, even with Cam Ward last night. I mean, things settled down a little bit, but he still gave up 4 goals in 2.5 periods. But it's about time for him to play, because if it isn't time, then he shouldn't be practicing.
In his prime, Corey Crawford was a fantastic goalie and a huge part of what the Blackhawks did. But combined with, Mully, some of the points you made, his age and his injury history, especially the last couple years, there does come a point where you have to move on from a player, even if you think And the player himself thinks that he can get back to that elite, top-notch level. You got to stop waiting around for guys at some point. I don't know if it's this season. I don't know if it's the offseason. I don't know what the long-term solution is at goaltender, but I don't think it's Corey Crawford anymore. I think that ship has kind of sailed. And as far as just being one point out of the playoffs, you know, they've been playing great They've been certainly surging. Colleton has done a good job lately of kind of transforming that when they were dead on arrival earlier in the year. But I think until they establish themselves a little bit more as just a point out or just the eighth seed or just the seventh seed, I think for me to really buy them more as a long-term contender this season, they're going to have to establish more consistency. They're on their way, but give me another month of it.
So there's about a week left of the trade deadline, right? A little less than a week. I'd like to see Corey Crawford on the ice. That's for sure. We were talking about it before the show. The offensive numbers that are being put up by these Blackhawks are unbelievable, right? And if you had even two-thirds of the old Corey Crawford, the Blackhawks would be right in the middle of this thing, without a doubt. You know, some have talked Cam Ward's never been in a postseason, so would he waive his movable rights, or however they call it, you know, no trade clause in hockey? Would he waive that to go to a potential playoff team that was in need of a backup goaltender? And then you get Corey Crawford in there, and you've got the young guy that you've given a $3-year, $1 million contract extension to. So that's one way to look at it. I'm excited. Mully, I wish they had won the game that you had been to, but at least Panarin scored a couple of goals, right? It reminded me of the old bit we did, you know, soup and a sandwich, right? He was part of that, right? So that was a fun memory for me. But last night's game, I was listening to it on the radio, and they couldn't keep up. I was like, wait, timeout, rewind. What is going on? Like, is this a real hockey game? So it's fun again, and their future is much brighter than the other team that resides in that building on the west side of Chicago.
This is a very important question.
Today is the first day NFL teams can apply the franchise tag on players. Should the Bears tag Adrian Amos $12 million, Bryce Callahan at $15 million, or neither, and try to work out a deal? And if you had to choose one, who would it be?
I would say neither, frankly. I don't think I would tag either guy. $12 million for Adrian Amos, you know, he'd sign that in a heartbeat. So would Bryce Callahan at 14. Was it $15 million? Yeah, here's the problem with the franchise tag is that it's a very costly number, and I don't know that helps you get a contract done with these guys. I would imagine that Amos will have some people interested in him because of the fact that he hasn't missed games. I think Bryce Callahan is a little different situation because of the injury and because of how he came into the league. I think he's played well. I think the problem with putting $15 million into him is how much money you got in the other corners. You know, you're putting a ton of money into that position. I would try to get one of the two signed. I think Callahan would be the guy I'd try to get signed because I think it's a really important position and he's coming off an injury, but I don't think I'd tag either guy. My priority would be Callahan over Amos, but I would not put a franchise tag. Another $15 million at corner, that is a lot of money to devote to one position.
I think even asking the question underscores how this franchise tag tool has been sort of misused or overused around the league. It was designed to identify players who were just that, franchise type players. None of these guys qualify.
It was designed so that you wouldn't lose a quarterback.
Exactly.
That's really the whole point.
It was a quarterback rule that people have started to apply throughout the roster, and neither one of these guys really applies or qualifies under that category. And I think that's with due respect. They both are contributors to a very good defense, but I don't think either one of them are irreplaceable. And I think when you look at one or the other, because I wouldn't franchise tag either one of those guys. That's too high of a price. If I had to put one ahead of the other, it certainly would be Bryce Callahan. I think he'd be the hardest to replace. That position around the league is getting paid like a starter money for a cornerback. I mean, just under $10 million with the average annual salary. That's a lot of money. That's why you have to start clearing some space, cutting Deion Sims, making some cap room if you're Ryan Pace and start to look ahead. But at the safety position, I would be more inclined to start to look at the free agent class, which has some very interesting names on it, including Tyrann Mathieu, who I think is a guy that you start to wonder, what is his price worth? How does he fit in your secondary? Can he play strong safety? And if he can, then wow, you add somebody like that to this defense, then it's even more dynamic. But Adrian Amos is not a guy that I would overpay to stay.
Absolutely not. Not using the franchise tag on Amos or Callahan. Neither of them are top five player on this defense. I mean, if we're talking about a corner, like the impact of a Rhodes or Peterson or safety like a Chancellor or Harrison Smith, okay, fine, we can have that conversation, but I'm not doing it. But to prefer one guy, I do prefer Callahan and the importance of his position with today's offenses.
I think both of these guys are overpriced. Both good players, certainly. I'm not trying to say that they're not. They're starters on NFL teams and good ones. But for this dollar amount, when you do have other needs across, you know, the entire roster, it's just, I don't think this is a good idea to commit this much money. It's just, I'm just glad that we haven't heard the McCaskey say that they're broke and they can't afford to sign anybody.
Wah, wah. Always trolling. Kevin, always be trolling. I would not use the tag on these guys, but I'll tell you what, one of the lists that I'm looking at, Callahan is ranked as the third best cornerback in the free agent class. They're also
looking at Pro Football Focus, because they got Amos listed as the best player in the league.
I think it's Pakoda, actually.
Yes, I'm all over Pakoda.
So who are you tagging?
Neither. I would not tag either, but you know, I think Bryce Callahan's going to be close to a $10 million a year guy when all is said and done. I don't think he's 15, but I think when all is said and done, if I had to pick one or the other, it would definitely be Bryce
Callahan.
That might
be one of those spots where, like running back, I mean, not to take anything away from him because he's very good, but you might be able to find a cornerback in the middle rounds who you can play that role and not pay $10 million a year.
You could find a strong safety, too. Free safeties are the ones that fly up.
I'd rather pay another tight end like $1.9 million and pay him $10 million than pay another tight end $5 million. Either their second-round pick either needs to get healthy and learn how to play professional football, or it's a check mark against the great Ryan Pace.
I think
crappy money on tight ends in this town.
The overriding theme about this is that if they use either one of those guys, they are both replaceable, and that defense can still be very good with or without them.
312-644-6767 is the telephone number. You're buying Tom Ricketts saying the Cubs weren't active in free agency because they're out of money, and are the Cubs being smart or missing out on a shot at a World Series? What do you think of the way Ricketts explained the racist emails of his father? Rick Renteria says Yoan Moncada could open the season at third base. What does that indicate? If anything, is that positive or negative news? And the Blackhawks are just a point out of the playoffs. How should they move forward with Corey Crawford and others? Today, the first day NFL teams can apply the franchise tag on players. Should the Bears tag Adrian Amos at $12 million, Bryce Callahan at $15 million? I don't know. Would you transition him? Is there any point to that? Or neither, to work out a deal? If you had to choose one of them, who would it be? It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.